really fast got an arbitrary scale idea.
Hold on.
No. Or canceled concerts.
Hello, humans. Welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I am Dan, and I have my voice.
I am Sean. Well, I have my voice. I'm just dead. So yep. Like that one time when I physically couldn't record and I lost my voice.
That's happened.
That was a while ago.
A couple of times now, unfortunately, because, you know, it's amazing how much you realize you need your voice until you realize you do a podcast every weekend.
I'm when you also don't have a coach, so that doesn't help.
Yeah. We got a really fun week of music. We were gone last week because you were gone last week for the 1975's concert in Red Rocks, Colorado. How was that, by the way?
That got canceled.
It got canceled?
Because of Utah.
That's sad. What happened? Did they get stuck in traffic or something like that?
I got caught in a snowstorm.
Oh, so they weren't able to play at Red Rocks.
Nope.
So you flew up to Colorado for a hockey game?
Pretty much.
Nice. Okay. So, that was a lot of the reason we didn't have Audio Face last week because of that. But way to go, 1975. You fucked us. No, I'm kidding.
They got caught in a snowstorm. They played Utah, and then they're on their way from Utah to Denver, and they had to cancel Red Rocks, which a lot of fucking people flew to see, including myself. And they just couldn't. There's no way they could reschedule it or anything because Red Rocks already has other programs going on. So, yeah. Unfortunately, they had to go skip it, and Maddie and the boys were very sad and shit. So was I. I'll be able to see them at some other point. I know they want to go back to Red Rocks, as they say how nice of it is, and that's why I wanted to go, because I've heard so many damn good things about it.
Yeah,
and I wanted to bring you the experience to the people, but that will happen at some point later.
Yeah, in the future, we'll bring it back. Hopefully, I can get to go this time. And even still, away from the 1975, Red Rocks Amphitheater is one of the best music
venues
in America.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, and I really want to see it.
So
I've been by it, but I haven't seen a concert in there, so.
Yeah, so that's why we haven't got that update for you. We really did want to have it, but alas, no cigar.
Yes.
We will jump into news this week. We have some albums to review, and also because of Sean's little cold, I will be hosting. But
yes,
we have some albums to review by Vampire Weekend. Father of the Bride came out this week, so mm-hmm. We'll hear about that. While You Were Gone, Schoolboy Q's Crash Talk album came out. Mm-hmm. And we have an EP from No Rome that we'll be checking out soon, later on this episode. Plus, of course, some really, you know, we have a lot of news, but I wanted to try to cut as much as I could. But every news story in here I find moderately enjoying, or it'll be
this first one are great.
Yeah, so right out of the gates, this is a really Audio Face story. So from the beginning, Churches criticized Marshmello, the EDM artist, and Churches, the, you know, whatever, alternative lead singer person.
The Scottish group.
Scottish. It's all Game of Thrones to me. She collaborated with Marshmello on a song, and so then she criticized Marshmello for collaborating with Chris Brown on a different song that Chris Brown and Marshmello did called Here With Me. No, sorry. Churches partnered with Marshmello and Here With Me. Mm-hmm. Chris Brown and Tyga and Marshmello released a different song. We've also commented on Tyga's propensity for sexual misconduct, so there's that.
Yes.
But then Chris Brown goes after Churches with a barn raiser of a sentence.
Well, first off, Churches said that put a statement calling out against Marshmello for working with abusers.
Yeah.
Which are facts.
Yeah, let's pause it for a second and say that's Audio Face right there. Of what we want celebrities and artists to do is to not work with these abusive artists and musicians that we know have these histories, so that they can't make any more money, so that they see that there's a negative impact to being an asshole and trying to have a music career where it's very socially adapted, if that makes sense.
Yes, precisely. And Chris Brown had something to say, and it may end up being a thing. Not my phone's fine. Okay. Just my button was jammed, so I took off my case. First quote. This is not me saying this. This is Chris Brown saying this. Quote, "Bunch of losers," all caps. These are the type of people I wish walked in front of a speeding bus full of mental patients.
Okay.
Keep groveling over your own insecurities and hatred. I'm black and proud, all caps. And I know it hurts that you guys are struggling with life or peace, so you are forced to see my success. You aren't even number two. Remember, second place only means you lost first. Ta-ta. Goodbye, peasants. End quote. He said that. I did not. Yeah. Chris Brown is now nominated for the Not a Little Bitch Award. Deadass. Fucking right. Deadass. He is nominated for the Not a Little Bitch Award. Because this fucking abusing ass bitch decides, he's like, gets called out for it anyways. Which is funny, from a group that already makes shit music to another group that makes shit music. So
no,
just,
let's just pause here. No one here makes good music.
No.
Church's album was like mediocre at best. Everything else is basically cancer afterwards, but continue.
So the fact that you call him out for calling you out for facts, yeah, you know, little bitch. Race has nothing to do with this. She called you an abuser because that's true.
Yeah.
Dumbass.
Like, hold on. He says, I know it hurts. I'm black and I'm proud. I know it hurts you guys that you're struggling with life or peace. So you're forced to see my success. You aren't even number two. Remember, first place means you lost first. Actually, I believe number one right now is Lil Nas X with Old Town Road. And like number 57 is the guy who beat Rihanna and still wants a career afterwards. So I would say that the real loser is Chris Brown. Noted. Possible little bitch, definitely nominated for the award, which we have some, it's stacking up this year. Noted Little Bitches, the offset Noted Little Bitch Award, mind you,
yes,
is stacking up this year. We have a little bit more on Noted Little Bitch offset later on, but so far on the nominations for the 2019 Noted Little Bitch Awards is Lil Pump, Slim Jimmy, Tekashi 6ix9ine, R. Kelly, and now Chris Brown.
We might have a surprise one for you at the end of the year, depending how the year comes out.
We might have a surprise six at the end of the year, but how fast this year is going.
There
are a lot of butthurt men out there.
This story is just funny.
This is just beautiful. Coachella happened. Coachella happened for 2 weeks in California.
It's still dog shit. It's really bad.
All of the, of course, musical acts, save for the 1975, were terrible. And
Maddie was saying how shit the crowd was, and he was all pissed off. And yeah,
that's what Coachella does to you. You go there and then you leave disappointed, which also
you go there and you leave with herpes.
Yeah. So there's a herp alert, which is a website.
God, that sounds like a really bad alarm. Herp alert.
You need life alert.
You need herp alert.
It's like life
when
alert
the time is right. Herp alert.
Herp alert's been in business for 2 years right now, and they are an online diagnosis and treatment website that also aggregates data from local hospitals across the country. And they said that usually in Southern California, the herp alert like sees 12 cases a day pop on their system. But during the first 2 days of Coachella, almost 250 patients spiked on the system. The previous biggest spike was Oscars weekend 2018, where there were 60 cases a day. So, you know, there's the Olympics, there's the Oscars, and then there's Coachella. Which one of these is not like the others?
Man, this is fucking great.
Which makes this thing, which I'm just going to add to this, a little bit of a worse idea. Tinder has announced a feature where you can promote which festival you plan on going to this summer in your profile.
Tinder.
Yes. Right. So you can sort of, you know, and because you put that little sticker on your profile that says, hey, I'm going to Bonnaroo or Outside Lands or Lollapalooza or EDC, usually Tinder is fenced, so you only find people who are relatively close to you. But with this feature, Tinder is going to find other people who have put that sticker on their profile, so you'll be able to see other people who are going to go to those festivals. So Tinder's trying to instigate a little bit of, you know, festival fuckery, if you will.
Yeah.
Which is not a good idea, considering what just happened, thanks to the information from Herp Alert.
Yes.
And now I'm going to try to segue to this as cleanly as I can, because we're still going to be talking
this
about
this fucking rough. This is really rough.
But apparently, so Cardi B went to a Billboard Music Award show, which you've heard my scorched earth take on Billboard from a couple episodes ago. We'll leave that aside. But she took some, you know, raunchy Awards pictures with Offset, kind of from that last video that they did. And there was scare that she had a little Janet Jackson moment.
But except down the south, little downstairs.
Down Janet, south, yeah.
Little south Janet Jackson.
But guess what? It turns out that wasn't true, and guess who proved it to us? Cardi B by showing us her down south Janet Jackson region. So she went on Instagram video shortly afterward that she's want to do and said, motherfucker's showing this picture, now you photoshopping it even more like Cardi pussy, with her, she yelled into the camera with her leg hiked up on the table. First of all, this ain't my pussy right here. And then she continues pointing towards the middle of her legs.
Wow. Okay.
This is where I birthed my daughter from. This here, okay. You know, the part where I go like this, that's just my ass. And so Cardi B in a very like, authentic
Coochie
way
B.
as possible. Coochie B. In her very authentic way as possible, set the record straight on her own wardrobe malfunction. I think it's pretty banger.
Right.
Sean just wants to get out of this please, block as quickly as possible. Please.
So many landmines.
So many. Never mind. We'll no. stop right there.
So Vampire Weekend released an album.
Yes. Father of the Bride.
Father of the Bride with the flat earth on top.
18 songs long.
Yeah, 58 minutes. So, you know, proper album. Considering they haven't. The last album they released was what? 2013.
Yeah, yeah. So this it's is a long time coming.
It's been a minute. 6 years. So, I don't know who else would go.
I would prefer if you start, because I think you might have a bit better knowledge of Vampire Weekend than me.
Yeah, I mean, I like their stuff. They're not my favorite, because I prefer more experimental alternative, but if I'm in a mood, I'll listen to them. This is, in 2019, it's kind of a refresh in a way, because it's, what we've been hearing a lot throughout the year is a lot of dark, you know, emo records and shit, as I like to call, which we'll have one later to review, which I do like. But yeah, after a while,
by emo, we don't mean the genre per se, we mean like the tone.
Like the tone, yeah, exactly. How it's, everything's very dark, it's reflective, looking inward on oneself and everything, and it's pretty deep and whatnot, and it can get overwhelming at times. This is kind of the opposite in a way, where the music itself is very airy, very light. Which, I mean, Vampire Weekend is known for, but it's very refreshing to hear in this year. I think if this came out a couple years earlier, I actually wouldn't have liked it as much as I do now. Most of the song, everything kind of, first off, they didn't do the Foster the People, there's no trap snare. They didn't fuck
this
up.
This is trap snare free.
Trap snare free. Lots of piano, which, I'm like, all right, maybe they listen to Audioface.
There are like two collaborators on here, and they both appear on multiple songs. So
yeah.
There's Danielle Heim, who appears on three songs, and Steve Lacey, who is the guitarist for the internet.
Yes, the guitarist for the internet.
And he appears on two songs back to back later in the end, Sunflower and Flower Moon.
Kind of go hard. Yeah, I quite enjoy this album. I don't know how much I'll listen to it because I need to be in a mood to it, but overall, everything, goes together. Every song goes together. It stops from top to bottom and it's pretty coherent. It's a little long. By the end, you can feel like it's starting to get dragged out a bit, but considering they haven't released anything for 6 years, I go, okay, it's warranted.
Right.
Like, I'll give that to you. It starts off pretty airy, like in that, like a phoenix kind of way.
Can I jump in and say, yeah, it's very folksy sounding to me in lots of parts of it.
I mean, it's not like Fleet Foxes folksy, but it's, I wouldn't say it's folksy per se, but like in that, I'm trying to think of a way to describe it, but you know that one dude that carries a guitar on campus?
Yeah, the one it's in like high school who's like,
yeah, yeah.
Having an acoustic guitar is my personality and my only chance at scoring with the opposite sex.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if that dude made music, but actually knew how to make music, is this album.
I mean, like, that's sort of, and I think that tone is there a lot in
most the album,
because Father of the Bride sort of takes that. I mean,
yeah,
if we're talking about a personality type, sure, that might get into that. Just the, your guitar playing father with the bride. Sure, I'm not going to go into that too much, but songs like Big Blue kind of go into this a lot, and this is the lead single that came off of, or one of the lead singles that came off of this album. Big Blue, once in my life I felt close to you. I was overcome with emotions when I was hurt and in need of affection. When I was tired and I couldn't go home, then you offered protection. So am I learning my lessons? Where it's very light, it's airy, it's sort of wistful and dreamy, not necessarily tied to any sort of like outside larger political scope idea.
No,
it's just not more at all. Like an exploration of emotions and stream mm-hmm. of consciousness laid out in a really like kind of nice way. And
yeah,
there's an
empathetic way.
Yeah, and there's definitely self-awareness to this because there's literally a song called "Unbearably White" where they dance around yeah. the kind of idea. But I think it's almost like they want to use that adjective as like a come away, oh wow, this is what this album sort of seems like.
And what we were wondering if they're going to make a lot of short songs in this album. They did make a few songs that were pretty short. There were some that were long, so it varied a lot. Because the singles they released were only, what, a minute and 40?
Yeah, and I think so, they released all of those short songs as singles. Because I remember 2021, Big Blue, Bambino were also pre-releases before this.
Yeah, so there's a couple tracks that are about the 2 minute mark, under 2 minute, and then there's a couple that are at that 5 minute mark too. So it's kind of a nice variation because it breaks up the album in a way where you don't get bored with the longer stuff because of how long the album is. It's a constant song change, which I do like. For if you have an album that's about an hour long, unless you're making a masterpiece, it's something to where it's listenable the whole way and it doesn't feel like it's dragging on a lot.
Yeah.
So
I will say they made an excellent use of how to deploy variety mm-hmm. in this album. And I'm still kind of trying to figure that out because I think a lot the other two albums we reviewed this week have that same sort of variety, but how
But the different approach, and there's lots of pros and cons. Yeah, many more cons.
Because with even the topic of variety, you have to think of, how do I put variety in an album, which is something that should have a little bit of variety, but should also have a little bit of, like, cohesion. So it's a fine balance.
And they towed that line and made it pretty damn good. A lot better than I was expecting from them, honestly. I quite enjoyed it. I don't know, did you enjoy it as well?
Yeah, I mean, like, I kind of just popped in with my little thoughts of it as we're going on, so I didn't spend too much time on my full opinion of it. Enjoyed it might be just about a stretch, but I definitely didn't hate it. I'm not going to trash on it. It's doing a lot here, and it's trying to do a lot, and I think it could fail in a lot of ways, but surprisingly doesn't. I think a lot of my bias is just,
it's not a genre you like, which I understand.
I have to very much be in a mood for this, but they made, if not necessarily stand out, interesting, like get your attention kind of music, very artistic and mm-hmm. purposeful kind of music.
And it puts you in a good mood too, which is nice for a change in a way. Especially with everything that's coming out this year, it's more.
But by good, I mean maybe more mellow. Because it might not. I mean, exactly. Songs,
yeah, it's like mellow, where you can put it down in the background when you're at like a pool party or something, and you can chill.
Yeah. It wouldn't even be a party; it'd be like a pool outing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, whatever.
A pool kickback.
Yeah, cool kickback.
Because there's like no bangers on this album.
No, not at all. But that's fine. It's nice for a change. It's because everything's been so formulaic the past about year and a half. This is something where it's okay. It's a bit different in the mood of the year. So yeah. I quite enjoy that. They stayed true to themselves and they changed it enough to make it feel like it's a variation of the band. But it's something that they stayed within their own realms. They didn't venture too far out, which is what has been a problem with a lot. They changed it just enough. Where it's that perfect audio face line of do something different, but don't fuck up.
Yeah.
So thank you, guys.
I will say this. So Danielle Heim had mm-hmm. three songs on there, and then Daniela. Steve Lacy had two. The Danielle Heim songs.
Daniela.
It's said Danielle here, like spelled with an E, not like with an A at the end. So I wouldn't assume it's Daniela.
I keep pronouncing that. Yeah, I do the German thing where I pronounce every letter. I did that with one of my kids before on accident. But Danielle, it's Danielle. I'm like, fuck.
Anyways,
every time.
Those songs are like the border of what I don't like with this genre.
No, they're,
where it's like duetty and it's nice
and
beautiful.
Okay.
You can do a duet together that's nice and great, or you can do a duet that kind of sounds borderline corny. And that's what these kind of started to sound like. At worst, this album just sounds corny. But best, I think the two-hit punch with Sunflower and Flower Moon gives
those
this
are
album
good,
some...
and the song right before those two, Sympathy,
is
a fucking good song.
I was trying to think which one was like
it was right before those two, Sympathy.
To you patiently, that one who broke my heart would have broken yours. but I'm to you, you are to me, let's go.
I've listened to that, I'm like, wow, that's actually a really good track for Vampire Weekend. Because normally, to me, they don't make like a track to where I go, wow. They just make, you know, decent sound. This is a track that made me go, wow. So that's a big statement.
To make you go, wow.
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 My dad likes that song a lot, actually. It's just funny.
The Kendrick Lamar one?
No. Beck.
Oh, the Beck one.
Beck, wow.
Yeah, dad, I was thinking of J-Rock.
No, dad does not listen to J-Rock. Dad fucks with Beck, though. Everybody's favorite Scientologist. But anyways.
Arbitrary scale is worker strikes. I'm going to call this the teacher strike that happened in Oklahoma that then spawned some other teacher strikes. You know, it's very down-home, folksy. You might overlook it sometimes, but, you know, it's a powerful force, and it's staying there.
I guess I'll go LA teachers strike that just happened not too long ago, where it's like...
The continuation of that.
The continuation, exactly. It's just, it keeps going on, you know.
Yeah.
The gift that keeps on giving, and, you know, stand up teachers.
Unionism, the gift that keeps on giving. This is just a perfect story. I know we're talking about people you hate to talk about, but they're all coming together in a place that's just perfect. Perfect. There is a show called Omniverse, which is going to be on Showtime. And it's about Kanye West. But Kanye West won't be playing himself. Kanye West will be involved in the production of this. But Kanye West will be played by one Jaden Smith.
And I wish you all could see the look on my face.
He's given up. He's just fundamentally given up in society. Entitled... Because, go ahead.
First off, there was already the Kanye Sunday service, which was... I hate Kanye so much. He was selling like $300 shirts at a Sunday service. What kind of fucking Christian are you? On Easter, like, come on, dog. People were selling the grass that you stood on because it's that...
He looks like a capitalist every single day.
Fucking Kanye.
But,
God, egocentric cunt.
Anyways, the first season... It's the Omniverse, the brainchild of West. And the first season will explore the ego through the alternative reality of West, whose younger self will be played by Jaden Smith.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, people gave Jaden Smith a lot of shit, but I give it... This will be interesting. I will watch it just for me to get mad.
This is some quad-dimensional wokeness. I just, like, can't handle this, honestly.
This is one that galaxy brain times 1,000.
Yeah. It's like, Jaden Smith studies, like, quad-dimensional wokeology, and it just completely doesn't work in this. But, let's analyze this other awkward one.
What the fuck?
So Moby is... Moby is coming out with his second memoir, Then It Fell Apart, which kind of chronicles his 90s, 2000s rise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the stuff that you hear, unfortunately, from a lot of celebrities' lives, musicians' lives, who get on the touring cycle and they get big really quick. It's a lot of drugs, a lot of alcohol,
craziness.
A lot of ridiculous things happen, a lot of regrets, including one where Moby kind of half recalls Half Dozen a Night, where he might have rubbed his penis on the current president of the United States.
Moby, go knob touch Donald Trump. quote of the fucking year.
I'll read you the excerpt from his book, where he's talking to his friend Lee. I'm forgetting exactly who his relation to is, whatever. I was dared to brush my drunken, flaccid penis up against Donald Trump's suit jacket. Although, in the spirit of alcoholic disclosure, my caveat is this. I was very drunk and high at the time, and I'm still not 100% sure it actually happened. But even though this has almost 20 years ago, I'm still perpetually stunned by the fact that Americans elected a president a dim-witted con man whose only claim to fame is that he once hosted a mediocre reality TV show. Moby, go knob-touch Donald Trump, Lee said. Really, I asked. Should I? Yeah, Dale said. Yeah, Clarice said mischievously. Shit. I realized I now had to knob-touch Donald Trump. I drank a shot glass of vodka. I drank a shot of vodka to brace myself, pulled out my flaccid penis out of my pants, casually walked past Trump, trying to brush the edge of his jacket with my penis. Luckily, he didn't seem to notice or even twitch. For the record, this is sexual assault.
For the record, this is funny as fuck.
Like, for the record, this is sexual assault. And the only reason I'm not, like, calling it out more forcefully so is that Donald Trump has sexually assaulted worse.
I would say Donald Trump has done 30,000 times worse.
Yeah. This is, like, it's very clear. It's like, I don't know, I may or may not remember a fun prank where I accidentally sexually assaulted the future president of the United States, who also sexually assaults people. So, like, it's a fun little random world we live in.
God.
Remember last year when we thought for, like, a little bit that Moby was part of the CIA?
Low-key, yeah.
Yeah.
Still could be.
speaking of jail time, Soulja Boy's arraignment has come in. His verdict has come down, and because
we'll drop the soap.
Yep, because he found some pew-pew powder, as Sean said, in his house,
yeah.
And because he lied about his previous community service, he'll be getting young 240 days in jail. That's a good portion of your year, along with 265 days of community service.
So, you know, ain't that a bitch.
Here's a suggestion. Do the community service.
Here's the thing. Just stop being a dumbass.
Just do the community service.
And just get it over with, mate.
Yeah, it's not that hard, but you know it's going to be
harder.
You know
what Chris Brown said? Just do that.
Prison. This is... I just love making fun of Soulja Boy. I had to throw it in there somewhere. But
so, Schoolboy Q.
Crash Talk.
Released an album, Crash Talk. 14 songs, 39 minutes long. Thank you for not making a ridiculously long album.
I have thoughts about this.
Claps. I have a lot of thoughts about this.
Interesting. I expect you to have a few thoughts about this.
I have a lot of thoughts.
Can I say I'll say my thoughts about the specs of the album?
Okay.
And then you go into your thoughts about the album itself.
Okay.
So I was looking at like a couple of Schoolboy Q's old album like lengths and how many songs it had on. And it's actually sort of interesting. So I believe that his last like blank face LP had 17 songs on it. So just three less than what's on here, but was 1 hour and 5 minutes long. Which is like almost double the length. Or like definitely like 60-70% of the original length. I'm not great at math on Sunday in my head, especially percentages and fractions. Anyways, the point is you made shorter songs, but you still made just about the same amount of songs. You can like it just sort of came to me when doing this calculation that you can play a lot with how long the lengths of songs are and still get a lot out of an album, which is kind of what we've been saying the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to see that this was an attempt to mess around with the economy of music length and specs in that sense. So that was my observation. What do you think about, you know, the music and the tunes?
This may have one of the worst trap songs of the year, and this may have one of the best rap songs of the year on it.
Wow.
What the fuck?
Okay.
This starts off god-awful with Gang Gang, which is just typical trap song.
It's a weird intro song.
It's a very weird intro song. Second song, Tales. Really fucking great track.
My friend, we shot the ones, stretch smoke in my blunt, I need the funds, low. I cut a windy one, but like, I wasn't with it. My SATs and grades was high enough, but I wasn't with it. I couldn't bring my dogs with me, so I wasn't with it. With the biscuit off the counter, me and Floyd get the dumping. Not a drop of blood in us, but can't say we ain't cousins. Was on the thiz all week, I think I'm finally recovered. And I tell you about it.
Tales sounds like it was like, Schoolboy Q and his team listened to a little bit of Operation Doomsday before producing some of the songs in this album.
This album is so schizophrenic. It goes really, really good, really, utterly dog shit. Okay, really, really good. Then more dog shit. It goes back and forth. It's playing with my emotions too much. Don't do this to me. Tales is one of my favorite rap songs I've heard in a very long time.
Wow.
I fucks with it. If you listen to the lyrics, I listen to the song twice because I go, okay, I want to actually see what this guy's talking about. And it's just about general life and things that have gone on, stuff in the black community and everything. And it's a very powerful song. I love it. And then right after has probably my least favorite trap song of the year.
Chopsticks.
And I didn't even have to listen to it. And I know I'm like, this probably has Travis Scott on it. And I already hate it. Not because it has Travis Scott, because I already hate Travis Scott. But looked at it, I'm like, I can't listen to more than 50 seconds of the song. I sat down and listened to 3 minutes and wanted to blow my brains out. And then Num Num Juice came on and it was okay track. Drunk was okay with Black with the Six. Six Clack.
Six Clack.
Lies is bullshit. Terrible song. 5200's good. Black Folk is good. Floating with 21 Savage is okay.
Really
21,
fast.
Yeah.
Wait, explain the 21 Savage. Actually, no, I'm already here. 5200 I like just because it did a thing that Num Num Juice did, mm-hmm. which is that it played with... changing the tuning in the middle of the song.
Got it on me. If I ain't got nothing that matter on me,
try, who fret no me? Ain't no smut, no chat on me. Money on me, running on me. Both got rocks, look better on me. Spaceship park, no landing on me. Wreck my limb, don't need it on it. Four words I know, yeah, fuck all you hoes. Ay, I do the most, ay, put that in quotes, ay. Diamond on me, jumping on me.
Which gives you this sort of like, especially in fast-paced rap, sort of this like creepy off-kilter vibe, which makes things feel sort of like dark and more intense, yeah, in a good way.
It's a very good track.
It's a very minor twist you play there, because it's literally just changing one or two notes, but it adds so much depth to it. 5200 and Num Num Juice did that really well. Continue, yeah, with Flirting with 21 Savage.
As much as I love 21 my dog, he made probably my favorite trap song of all time, which is Numb. That song goes hard. He needs to stop with the trap tags that he's been using for the past 3 years. He needs to either come up with some new ones or do something different, because it's starting to, all his features now are starting to,
not trap tags, but like his,
yeah,
his some
little
of
like
his
21
phrases.
Yeah, his phrases his and everything. Things, like, it's becoming very repetitive now, to the point where I'm like, okay, do something different, dog. Like, your album are Greater Than I Was is great, but your features need to be a little different now, because every feature now is starting to sound the same, and I don't want that from you, dog.
Oh, that's...
Change it up.
I'll pause you here, just because there's a lot to go off of this. I think that a lot of different artists, like... Yeah, this is definitely of the categorized between 21 Savage comes hard for a feature versus 21 Savage phones in a feature. Mm. This feels like on the... If I'm making a black and white world where it's only one or the other... Mm. 21 Savage more foam this one.
Foam, definitely.
Yeah. I think it's still decent and still better than most other rappers do it, but like when you've heard a lot of 21 Savage, especially when Savage is a feature heavy artist and has only recently more started to come out with more of his consistent like individual albums and works, not counting Slaughter Tape and stuff back then, but like with Issa album, I Am Greater Than I Was, he's starting to show that he has like more than enough caliber as his own artist. Mm-hmm. Yep. But then Without Warning is like mixtape category. Yeah. But like, as his own, as an artist, he's starting to show that he can, of course, hold his own. But all artists do this. There's sometimes where Drake is just, like, phoning it in, and sometimes that's on his own album, and a lot of times that's on features. But sometimes he comes correct to a feature and actually has, like, lyrical talent, and, you know, it's still
no,
Drake.
No, he doesn't.
It's still Drake, but, like, it's...
it's Drake. I'm not going to ever give him credit for anything.
It's still Drake, but it's, like, above average Drake. And this happens often, where sometimes...
Yeah, it's just me being... Being overcritical because of how much love I give for Free 21.
No, but I guess my point is that a lot of artists do this thing where they're really good in one setting and then they phone in their features.
No, I could see that in that way. Because I didn't know he was on the track at all. I was just listening to it. I'm like, oh, there's 21. I'm like,
I felt like he would be just on like a 21 track, just like that has a sound. It has a vibe kind of jumping right into it. It just always does.
The song after that, Dangerous with Kid Cudi, fucking great track too. Really, really good track. Kid Cudi is interesting. I either love it or I hate it with Kid Cudi usually, because he can be kind of a noted little bitch at some points. And then other times it's great.
I'll go back to the Kid Cee Ghost review from last year.
Literally,
as
exactly
long as
that.
You have someone to hold Kid Cudi a little bit back, then you can make some good work with him. And but you need to keep him on a leash.
You gotta keep him on a fucking tight last leash. He did go to the Kanye service, that was whack. But anyways. Die With Them's good, Crash is okay, and the last two tracks are kind of forgettable. But overall, I can listen to this and not want to kill myself after every single track, which is saying something for trap, because I've been yelling at it for, you know, the past 2 years.
Yeah.
So way better than I ever imagined a Schoolboy Q album going in the year 2019. So props to you, because you made one of my favorite tracks of the year.
Yeah, I think so. Crash Talk is broken down.
And also one of the worst, so I gotta give you that too, thanks.
And when you say
back
that...
Back to back.
They're back to back too, that's amazing.
It's like, I'm like, after Tails, I'm like, oh my god, this is great. And then Chops, I'm like, oh my god, did you not put Travis Scott? God damn it. Yeah. Stop.
It's amazing. So I didn't like the album that much my first listen through to it. Ooh. And it felt disjointed, and it made no sense. Crash Talk, because you listen to it through a full album, it has like Crash Talk, take one, take two. Like, there's these different parts of it. And when you listen to it again, it's almost like each part is trying to separate a tone or an idea. Except for the first part, where it seems to have all of those ideas in the first beginning four songs. And then it sort of continues for this different thing. So I could kind of split up this album between like hood rat shit versus deep shit.
Yes.
And it goes hood rat, deep, hood rat, deep.
Yeah, I keep it.
Deep hood rat, deep.
It goes back and forth.
It's just back and forth in a way that doesn't sort of make sense. And when it's doing the hood rat stuff, like, it's not always a miss. I think Chopsticks was like, it's a miss, yes. The thing with Chopsticks is that it sounds like Butterfly Effect, but a B-side slowed down. Even to the post-chorus thing where it goes like, whoa, that is very Travis Scotty.
I'm like, please stop.
But like, Num Num Juice is just like one of the bangers of the year. It's just so good.
Funny song too.
Yeah.
It goes hard.
And like that same kind of like go hard aspect comes out in 5200 in Lies to an extent. Not the greatest implementation, but I think Lies is really good in that it has that sort of the tone that Schoolboy Q is going for.
Even though it's a track I don't like, I could see it.
And meanwhile, with Tales, you had some other songs that were similar to Tales. 5200 was like woke but also hood. Mm-hmm. Black Folk goes definitely into the Tales kind of line IDing. But even you can go with Dangerous, Die With Him, Crash, pretty much the last part of the album. Yeah. And it stays pretty consistent to this deep thing.
Exactly, so that's why I like it.
I feel like coming back to my original thing with the album regarding the specs, we're seeing something cool happening, which means albums are getting shorter, but they don't feel shorter. You're still able to pack a lot of ideas in there. It's 3 songs less, but still like 40 minutes less than the previous Schoolboy Q album. And still feels like it has a lot of ideas. If it, like, I think you could move a couple of songs around and cut one, and you have a really solid album here. But, like, this is the same record label that, this is Top Dog Entertainment, this is the same record label that last year's Redemption by J-Rock came out on, and so I'm gonna naturally compare it to this. Redemption's significantly better. Just because it has a little bit more range. It's doing all the stuff that this album's trying to do, maybe not as intensely or not as forthrightly, but it's still doing the hood elements, the woke elements, and it's bringing them all together in a cool way. So I like it.
Yeah, this is... God, Strikes. I'm trying to think of Strikes. This is the... when the Stanley Cup wasn't... when there was no Stanley Cup. Shit, what year is that? 2005? 2006? No, 2006. 2005. Because there was a NHL players... dispute that was a strike. That's this, because you know it was good because they needed to go on strike, but it was sad because the Stanley Cup didn't. There was no winner of the Stanley Cup that year, so it's the same thing where it plays with my emotions. That's what this is.
Gotcha. I'm just gonna say this is the Bolshevik Revolution. It's kind of a worker strike, right?
All right, his words, not mine.
By the way, Sean, we have
This is a great moment in audio face
because we get to do the Vanilla Ice Award, a nomination for the Vanilla Ice Award.
Travis motherfucking Scott, who just was giving shit.
This is why I threw this in right after this album, because I honestly didn't know if you'd like Schoolboy Q, but I knew this would cheer you up.
He is sued by 3-6 Mafia's DJ Paul over claims of copyright infringement. And it's pretty bad.
Yeah. So this is called, I'm going to put this in post, but we've both heard both songs, so we can talk about this a little bit.
It's pretty
3-6 Mafia has a song called Tear the Club Up 97. And there's, like, most of the song is pretty much different, but the hook for it is naturally a very simple thing. It's just tear the club up, tear the club up.
Mm-hmm.
It goes into that sort of thing. Now, the hook for Travis Scott's 2017 song, No Bystanders, which is actually one of my favorite songs off the album.
No.
You just hate the whole thing. We had this disagreement, fundamental disagreement about Travis Scott, and it's still going on.
And then this makes me happy because it's like, ugh.
And No Bystanders doesn't share a lot of similarities with the 3-6 Mafia song, If I'm Being Real, but the hook is pretty similar the line is... fuck the club up, in a similar cadence. And I was on this flight, man. Told the pilot ain't no flight plans. Can't believe whatever I'm saying. And they know whenever I land.
Hotel, but you can't take no L's. Yeah,
in pretty, a similar tone.
It's the dun 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 dun.
It's DJ Paul and Scott are already in touch accordingly. Everything will be worked out with the 3-6 Mafia member, Juicy J, and Travis Scott. There's no beef, there's just business. And so you'll hear both the songs. I think that this is happening a lot, especially in rap music, where these are phrases that are just like said out loud, and then we put them into music. But these phrases, because they're just phrases that people say, it's not very hard for someone else on the other side of the country at another time to come up with this phrase and then use it in their song, and it ends up sounding the same. I didn't think this was as clear with Canada, Canada, Canada versus Canada, Canada.
Oh, that's the worst.
Because those aren't even referencing similar things.
No, that's just literally happened. Sounds bad.
And that's why YG won the Vanilla Ice Award last year. This, I don't know. Like, it definitely sounds similar. But I'm not going to say that Travis Scott was like, yeah, I'm going to go down to 3-6 Mafia for this song where they say, tear the club up. I was going to say, fuck the club up, and then I'm going to make a new song. Because fuck the club up is just a phrase. Like, yeah. People just say that to themselves when they talk about what they're going to be doing this weekend. So it's not like Canada or Count It Up where you're trying to do something like that.
No, that's the gold standard.
No, the gold standard is still Vanilla Ice.
That's obviously word. Vanilla Ice.
But the audio-faced gold standard, the more recent
one... is Canada.
Yeah.
And that will never not be the audio-faced gold standard.
Yeah.
So this is nominated.
Yeah, this is...
formally nominated.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to nominate fucking Mac DeMarco for No Little Bitch for this, but I'm not that
bad. Don't, because let's read further. Mac DeMarco is releasing an album. We'll be reviewing it very soon, possibly next week even, called Here Comes the Cowboy. And it's funny because if you remember last year, one of our favorite albums was an album by Mitski called Be the Cowboy.
Yeah, it was on a few people's Album of the Year list, which I agree with. Great fucking album.
Yeah, what makes it better is both albums have the same lead single title, Nobody.
Yep.
So people are wondering, and by the way, this does look very bad, because a lot of Mitski's fans were going, hey, Mitski's a female artist of color, why Mac DeMarco, white guy musician, are you seem to be copying the aesthetics down to the song title of Mitski? That's really not a good look, dude. And so a lot of Mitski's fans were rightfully pretty pissed about this, but DeMarco came out about the controversy in an interview with Huck magazine, in a very Mac DeMarco kind of way, going, yo, like, this is not how it worked. Here's how it happened. He basically said, to paraphrase, I didn't show anybody the record, so I handed it in. I went to my record label. I said, this is the title, and this is going to be the first single. I've been working on it for a while, basically just huddled myself in, and just here it is. And it turns out that the ideas were very, very similar to
fucking
each other.
Hilarious.
Oops. Yeah. DeMarco said that he and Mitski actually ended up texting shortly after, like, he handed it in, and then he got the word back that, oh, wow, this all sounds similar. And it seems like Mitski's, like, is at least a good sport about it. Doesn't seem like it's trying to be upset about it. And for Mac DeMarco's credit, it seems like, no, I'm not trying to do this to overshadow Mitski. I legitimately didn't hear about Mitski before this album when I was making it. And now that I've heard Mitski, I think she's kind of dope, and I'd love to collaborate with her. So I think, nope, happy ending all around.
That's just funny.
That's just really uncomfortable.
It is extremely uncomfortable. So, hey, if his album isn't on the par with hers, then oof. That album was damn good.
Yeah, Mitski's Be the Cowboy. I don't know if it made it in the Audio Face Awards, but it could have been just literally oversight.
No, it was literally oversight because of how much good shit came out in the year. But, I mean, there's a few people where I saw it was their albums of the year, and I go, that... I don't disagree with that. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. Mitski's Be the Cowboy won a lot of albums of the year. I wouldn't have given it our album of the year.
Okay, no, we didn't.
I'm still happy with what we did.
Yeah.
But we
should have... It's not better than A Brief Inquiry.
I wouldn't say it's better than Oxnard. But it's a phenomenal album. It definitely could have been like a last up contender to album of the year.
Mm-hmm. Dive, which is one of my favorite little hipster indie... on LSD all the time bands. They've announced their third album is coming this year. Yes. Give me this album. I am ready. This is something I recommended to Dan before because Dan wanted some hipster indie shit that people didn't already tell him about. So I told him about Dive and he fucks with them.
Yeah.
And it's really, really good, like jamming music is the best way to put it. I love listening to it in the background. It's perfect for driving, especially where we live in SoCal and we can just go on PCH and chill. That's perfect music for it. Actually, it was in like my top five of top listened to artists of the year last year was Dive.
Yeah.
That's how much I didn't notice how much I listened to them until that.
Audio Face episode 32 was a music recommendations episode at the very end. And your first recommendation was Dive.
Don't sleep.
Yes. This is their first album that's coming out since they dropped their bassist, correct? Yeah.
In 2016.
Their bassist was found, you know, as you do on the internet posting racist shit.
I mean, always.
As one does. This is Welcome to the Internet. Mm-hmm. And so they split with him. But yeah, they've got a new thing coming out this year. And like I said, like that's just their drama controversy. I don't care about it too much. It seems to have been handled really quickly and then moving on. Dive is a really interesting sound. Yes. I love that recommendation. I have gone back to it in different times, in different moods, mm-hmm. since you recommended it literally a year and 5 months ago.
Yeah. I jumped on that train.
I will very much be looking forward to that when it comes out.
Big time, me too. And speaking of another artist that I recommended is No Room, which he released EP.
Crying in the Prettiest Places.
Yeah, we reviewed his little Rip Indo Hisashi last year.
Mm-hmm.
His first little EP, and this is another one that he released this year. And this is interesting. I like No Rome in general because he does a lot. He's part of the same label, Dirty Hit Records, with the 1975 and Japanese House, Pale Waves, you know.
Yeah.
The English Contingent. And this is kind of a variation off of his previous EP. It's a evolution of himself. The first track, Five Ways to Bleach Your Hair. By the way, it's 6 songs, 17 minutes long. Got to say that first. First track is only 1 minute and 19 seconds long, and it's this kind of 2005 emo track where I go,
really? It's titled Five Ways to Bleach Your Hair. How is it 2005
right?
emo?
Right. And I go, is this going to be the whole thing? And then the second track, Stoned in the Valley, is a more experimental pop track, but it's not as poppy as his first EP was
at
all.
It's pop in the sense that it's familiar, like it's easy to, it's approachable, but
it's definitely experimental in a way, darker.
It keeps this 2000s alternative inspired musicality throughout it that I think is really good. Not because it's on brand, but Stone in the Valley is probably one of my favorites from the EP.
Right. Cash Money, which is the track that came out, his single he released a little while ago, is okay. I didn't like it much. Pink is good. Rimbaud, Come and Sit for a While, the fifth track, the first about minute of the track sounds a lot like the first half of the for 1975's I Like It When You Sleep, the track and not the album, but the opening of the track is like this kind of interlude thing of just electronic music sounds and little bleeps and bops and stuff, and his sounds very similar to that. In a good way, but it's something where I go, okay, this is interesting, and then like the track continues after that and makes it. So I did enjoy that, and then All Up in My Head is a good experimental track.
Yeah.
So this is something I enjoyed a lot more than Rip Indo Hisashi, because it felt, this first works kind of felt repetitive in a way, but this is something where I go, okay, he's starting to really express himself as an artist, really get into what he can do himself. So, very dark and emo, which I alluded to earlier in this podcast, but something that I do thoroughly enjoy, and I think is a lot better than his first work last year. Hmm. So, what's your 2 cents? Sixpence.
My song of Sixpence. Mm. My song of Mike Pence, who is a homophobe. Anyways, hearing Rimbaud remind me of, because we're on Dirty Hit albums, How to Draw Petrichor from A Brief Inquiry. Yeah. How it starts with this weird electronic thing and then goes into something else. Mm-hmm. While we're on the tone of what it is, again, I want to say, not emo in music. This does not sound like 30 Seconds to Mars.
No, exactly.
Like,
yeah,
this is emo in terms of like what the...
This isn't My Chemical Romance, but...
Yeah.
The first track was, now I go, oh no. But then the rest of it isn't.
The topics as far as lyrically how it's supposed to feel, it's emo. Sound-wise, it's No Roam's blend of modern, like, neo-alternative, neo-pop with...
The darker...
with darker undertones and settings. Again, it has that, great. Like, 2000s, that comes from its 2000s alternative backing, or, like, starting foundation.
But and feels new, right?
Yeah. But, like, that's where a lot of the emo darkness comes from, which helps to... Emo darkness in the instrumentation, which helps to complement the actual... lyricism and music in that.
Yes.
But yeah, I largely liked it. I don't know if I'll take a different approach to Rip Endo Hisashi and Crying in the Prettiest Braces, which may ultimately be the exact same thing as you said, but I still like Endo Hisashi. I think
I do like it a lot. I'm just saying this is more of my personal genre view. Yeah. Like, I like experimental more.
You explicitly said it was, like, you liked it more and you felt like it was a growing thing. I just feel like these are two different. Usually when you have a successive EP come out from one artist and then they release another EP and they're a new artist, it's like they're growing musically and changing their sound a little bit and kind of growing to that. And you could write No Roam's like early autobiography and say that Crying in His Prettiest Places is where he started to do that. But to me, Endo Hisashi is still, if it were released today, I would still think it was great.
Oh yeah.
And there are songs on Endo Hisashi. Like, to me, Endo Hisashi is just, like, a happier vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to compare it directly to Crying in the Prettiest Places, which is, like, the dark emo B-side to Rip Endo Hisashi, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, like, they're both, I guess, two parts of the same.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the sense that we usually say the same, where it sounds bad or unoriginal, but they sound like works that are part of each other.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is an artistic value, I'll give to that.
So this is a solid, like, the first round of Macron protest strikes.
The yellow vests?
Yeah, the first yellow vests. This is a solid yellow vests right now.
I think this is the second round of yellow vests.
You want the second round? All right, the second round is fucking ratchet, man. Ain't going down.
Going down in the streets, dog. No, because...
Don't go to Paris. You got buildings on fire, got churches on fire.
No, I'm calling it the second one because this is the one that scares the establishment.
It actually does.
Yeah.
But low-key.
Love it. I'll lead this one because this is an uncomfortable haranguing of one of my favorite musicians.
And this is something where we got to. This is where love our podcast because we come correct with our favorite artists.
Yeah.
And it's a time where we got to rip into our boy.
Yeah. Damon Albarn, this is not going to be a good day for you.
If your name is Damon and last name's Albarn, I'm so sorry today, but you need to come correct.
So Damon Albarn has done a lot outside of Gorillaz. He's made.
Naturally.
Yeah. He did. Just recently.
Yeah.
I'll say since 2015. He's done a lot of
Good, Bad, the Queen.
Good, Bad, the Queen. There's some Blur shit. There's some, like, random stuff here and there.
His solo, work.
Solo work, Everyday Sad Robots. Robot.
Yeah, okay. I say, well, I'm just him sitting on a stool, slouched, crying, shit, whatever.
I have a hilarious story about that album, but I'll save it for after the podcast. but that's sort of Damon Albarn's thing. And if there's anything that unites it all together, it's this... I guess you could say...
Political undertones?
There's political undertones with Damon Albarn's melancholy pop sort of way of songwriting. And so he did an interview in a magazine where he said, on the surface it makes sense to... he's kind of talking on the topic of making political music. But he says that... On the surface, it seems to me to stay friends with your neighbors. That's just like basic common sense. On the broader picture, the license is given to some of the really tragic ideas that people are harboring at the moment. This is the tragedy of Brexit. It opened a Pandora's box. So, of course, Damon being the more, like, British artist, he's kind of hearkening a lot of his political backlash to Brexit. In much the same way that people argue that Trump wasn't like a symptom, or Trump wasn't like a magic thing. He was a symptom of what was already happening in the United States, mm-hmm. kind of brought to light. That's sort of what he's trying to make Brexit seem as. So we're on the same page here so far. It's fine. Mm-hmm. He sort of goes on and he says that music has become a little bit more political as a response to events. And he says, it needs to. It really needs to. The selfie music is not sustainable. Have I made a selfie tune? I've probably tried to, but my innate obtuse nature prevented me from doing it properly. And so then he kind of like, he stumbled upon a phrase and then kind of starts using this phrase as like, I've noticed men in power do when they're not, then they don't know what they're talking about, but they are in front of cameras. They need to sound like they're talking about something quickly. And so they just coin a phrase. And so Albarn kept repeating this selfie music thing. What's happening out here, it's the selfie generation. They're talking platitudes. Yeah. And, okay, here's how I'm going to unpack this. Damon Albarn's first call to fame was Blur.
Yes.
Being the pop icon from Blur.
Mm-hmm.
Where back in the day, of course, you had enemies like gobslobbing all over Blur versus Oasis.
Oh, yeah.
But you had an entire different commentariat of British media going... Pop music used to, you know, the Beatles were political, Pink Floyd was political, all these old bands or different bands, the Clash, they used to have political aspects mm-hmm. to it. Now it's just pretty boys jumping around swimming pools for MTV, and that's what music has become. It's the self, it's like the, basically, older people, back when Damon Albarn was getting his start, were basically saying the same thing about Damon Albarn as he's saying about music now. Because, again, old head, you just, it's the same thing that happened when, it's the same thing that happened when, last year, who was that artist, Post Malone,
yes,
said that rap music doesn't make me cry anymore, there's nothing that makes me feel in rap. Open your fucking eyes, dude.
Yeah.
Like, there is plenty of music that is politically aware that's out there. Yes, of course, there's the pop trash, that's just always gonna exist for every generation, it's gonna be there, and we'll commentate about it, and that's like, what we do as music critics. But for Albarn to say that the selfie music is not sustainable, we need to get rid of all of this kind of music because it's not political.
It needs to be more political.
It just shows like a little bit of lack of self-awareness to like, does Damon forgotten what it was like to be, has Damon forgotten park life? Has he forgotten what it was like when he was in that position, being derided for creating music that didn't have enough impact or meaning? When... like, you could literally go back into park life and go, no, there's meaning in there. It's a commentary on, like, 90s British culture, the entire thing, top to bottom. But it's the same sort of benefit of the doubt that Albarn never got when he was in Blur, that now he's not giving to newer artists now that he's old man Albarn.
Yeah, he's wrong. Definitely doesn't need to be more political because we've had this issue of people whining about Trump for the past 2 years. So unless you have a very good sense of the line of being just political enough to where music, it makes damn good music, like Hail to the Thief.
Right.
So where you can kind of hide your meeting with some people so they just like the music, and then other people like us. So, oh, you're talking about how Bush stole the election. Let's go in.
Yeah.
That's good. But for the most part, there aren't enough artists that know how to make
subtle music.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't know how to do that,
so he's definitely wrong on that point. And in the current climate, it's already being overdone, so it doesn't need to be more.
I think that's a good point you made, too, is that, like, a lot of the complaints we've had about different albums on Audioface, a lot of the reasons that there'll be new albums that come out from musicians that we know have just taken too much of a political bent, and we just don't want to do it, because we know the music is going to be covered with that. We just, like, shit-talked on the OJs, who, according to Google, are still alive. And we were talking about how they made an album that was overly Trumpy and overly political. And so there's a way to approach it where you can be super subtle about your politics and make the most like meaningful, powerful, provocative sort of statement involving politics with that song. I think that Love It With We Made It, while not entirely subtle, does have subtlety to it that propels it to be a really good, like, powerful
It's a
song.
Damn good song in general.
Yeah.
So it's something that not many artists can make.
Which, like, meanwhile, also shared on that album is Two Time, which I could basically describe as selfie music if you wanted to, as Damon Albarn did. But, like, that's why, and it's surprising from Damon Albarn, who's literally made music that borders on this line, doesn't seem to get this, or is just, like, too old to really understand exactly what he's saying.
Yeah.
nevertheless, that's sort of what's going on.
Anyways, get ready, because
we always an audio face on a high note.
Yes, we always an audio face on a high note. And we may have a 2-time winner of the Nodal Little Bitch Award. The Offset times 2 Nodal Little Bitch Award. So
no, then we have to go by his government name.
What's his government name?
Isn't it something Cephas?
Oh,
Kiari Cephas.
I can make so many jokes if that's his actual name, but I'll save it.
Yeah, Kiari Cephas is his name.
All right, if he wins the No Little Bitch Award, it's the Kiari Cephas No Little Bitch Award.
Kiari Kendrell Cephas.
It's the Kendrell Cephas No Little Bitch Award, because that just sounds funny.
Yeah.
So this dumbass smashed a dude's phone.
See, here's the thing. Let's.
Okay, Dan just wants to back up. I want to go straight in.
I'll give you 20 seconds, and then you go straight in.
Okay.
Offset's apparently, for once, taking care of his child, and went to Target, and I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying. He went to Target to go get some supplies, and of course, because you're a celebrity and you go out, you're going to have some teenagers who want to, you know, fuck with you or say hi to you or whatever. And so, this teenager tries to take a Snapchat video with Offset passing by, and Offset just throws something right at the screen of this teenager's iPhone 7, cracking it.
Yeah, breaking.
This is when you can go in, Sean.
Yeah.
So this becomes
dumbass broke his phone.
Yeah. It becomes a meme online.
Oh, 100% becomes a meme. A great video, by the way. It's just Offset looking over and just chuck his... By the way, great throw.
Yeah.
Got an arm on that dude.
Offset, you on rare form.
Right? But the dude whose phone broke, I guess he filed a police report. Because all he wanted, simply, as most sane people would, just Offset to pay for a price for the broken phone. That's it. Which, you know, as someone who would break my shit, that's fine.
Yeah.
Dude who scraped my car, whoever you are, fuck you, and paid for my car, asshole. Still salty. It's just simple. You break somebody else's thing, you gotta pay
for it. You break it, you buy it.
Exactly. But Offset's no little bitch and says, I'm being exploited over a fan smashed phone and isn't gonna do shit.
Yeah. The main objective in the police filing from the person said from the guy who had the phone said, yo, I don't want Offset in jail. I don't want like money out of this. I don't need a ton of fame. Although like, dude, I was taking a video of you and you smashed the camera. You did it to yourself.
Yes.
Do not give your haters content. That's literally the number one rule of the internet. He just wants the money back for his phone. And so Offset responds and saying he's being exploited over the whole situation. And the main reason his lawyers are saying that it's being exploited was because it took 4 days to file the police report after the initial incident originally went viral. So it's like, oh, he's trying to get some more, you know, attention, money, fame, airtime. No, look at the report. It's not asking for a ton of money. It's asking for enough money to fix the screen on an iPhone 7.
Which Offset has more than enough money to do that. He could fucking buy a steak and apple if he wanted to.
My God. Literally. Noted Little Bitch Offset would have been nominated for an award if it were just on this. But Noted Little Bitch Offset already won the Audio Face Award for being a noted little bitch. So, I mean, is Offset the Dave Rubin of trap music?
I mean, I still want to nominate Dave Rubin. All right, y'all, that's been Audio Face.
Ideas.
It's been the Ideas podcast called Audio Face. Thanks for listening to us, even though my head cold's probably killing people.
No, I think you did a pretty good showing.
Good, I tried
not to. Now you're going to be asleep for the next 3 hours.
I got to play hockey tonight, which is fucking fantastic. That's killing hilarious. Myself. Sorry about Red Rocks. It didn't happen, but you can follow us and my crying, and you can if you already followed me, you could have seen all of the snowy pictures that I had and the crying that the tweet that sent out of the concert being canceled. You can follow me at Instagram on Instagram and Twitter at SW Suarez. You can follow Dan because he has to be different. His Instagram is Dan from the internet, and his Twitter is at Dan from the web, because that's never changing. And you can follow our podcast on Insta and Twitty at Audio Face Pod. And at some point, someday we will do more video shit, but we don't know when, but it'll happen because we do want to make that happen.
I think it'll happen fairly soon.
It'll be definitely a summer because that's when I want to get the garage done anyways and have our little studio.
We have six episodes till episode 100.
100's going to be on film. Like, we got to have film 100.
Yeah, yeah. This month is actually going to mark the 2-year anniversary of Actual Audio Face. Well, mm-hmm. It's been longer than 2 years because we have that lost episode.
We have the lost episode, which no one else can hear.
The first episode of Audio Face was uploaded May 21st, 2017.
Shit.
So
I remember that day.
Yeah.
We sat in this room and I post that chair. I'm like, what are we doing? we gave Kanye West a lot of shit.
Now we gotta film it. Okay, but yeah, it's really exciting. Hitting the triple digits, we're not gonna do this ever again. Triple digits, but anyways, it's
big. We're not hitting quadruple digits.
If we get paid, we'll hit quadruple digits. Okay. But until then, yes. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week where we'll have a wild card week next week, but we definitely have Mac DeMarco, so we'll have that as well.
So, yeah, that should be interesting to hear.
Later.
Peace.